Welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. My name is Banzi.
And I'm Blair. Dad's Group is about helping fathers and helping families. And what we aim to do on this podcast is bring you conversations that will build up your fathering and support the growth of your family. So, Banzi, who we got this week, mate?
This week, we've got Dr. Matt Sanders. And he is the creator, the founder, the brain behind Triple P Parenting.
Great.
So that's a positive parenting program. Many of our listeners will have heard it because it's actually a government-funded now program that's accessible online across the whole of Australia. So it's out there, and that, like, this is the guy who started research in 78.
Wow.
And from that research, Triple P has established, and it's now run in over 30 countries, across all sorts of languages, religions, everything, different family constructs. So yeah, it's a big thing. And
yeah.
Matt's the mind behind it. He also works at the University of Queensland, heading up a parenting institute there. So he knows his stuff.
Awesome.
He really knows his stuff. Yeah.
So like you said, that's quite big, man. Like topics like that can be quite overwhelming. So why should a dad tune into this episode?
Yeah, look, what Matt does really well is he keeps breaking it down in this chat. And he even said at the start, like, these programs are no good if they can't come back down to research-based practical tools.
Absolutely.
And that's what he's built in Triple P is a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And this chat is very much about what are the tools that you're going to need as a dad.
Oh, mate, get onto that. That's so good. So what's one thing that stood out to you through this interview?
Yeah, the thing that stood out to me was he talked about how he himself is a granddad. And we've actually had this with a few guests now who are granddads and talking about, like, this new stage of life that they're in. And what Matt was talking about was how he could see throughout his whole fathering how there were different almost like chapters or eras, like, and that, like, every few years it was like adapting to where his kids were in that next stage. So he talked a lot about that evolution of fatherhood while you're still in it, and how you need to adapt every time. So, like, what works for you as a parent now won't necessarily work when they're 5 years old, when they're 10 years old, when they're 15.
Absolutely.
So he talked about always upskilling and picking up new tools. And so that was really cool. It was really cool to sort of think about it, you know, particularly as new dads ourselves, to hear someone on the other side of it say, actually, this is what it was like for me. It wasn't like one singular linear progression. It was like a zigzag, you know, whirly bird sort of situation where I kept having to adapt.
That's so cool, man. Again, coming from someone with four kids, you know, you can't parent all kids the same, every kid the same. So I'm really excited for this episode because I feel like that's a season that I'm in at the moment, is like, all right, one, the future for my oldest, but two, I can't treat my other kids like I did my oldest, and really trying to, yeah, navigate that because it's a huge guessing game. So I love these episodes with such practical advice and tips and tricks and all that sort of stuff. So that's so cool. But hey, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you could please help us out to like, subscribe and share this episode with anyone that you would find would be helpful for, that's going to actually help us out a lot. You know, we are a nonprofit organization that's trying to bring change a culture of fatherhood for the better, and we need your help to do that. So please get onto that like, subscribe and share buttons. We would greatly appreciate it. But until then, enjoy the episode, guys.
Well, good morning, Matt, and welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. We always like to start with a check-in. So I'll ask you, how are you going out of 10 today?
Where 10 is great.
10 is great, that's right.
I'd say I'm doing about an 8 today, so I'm feeling pretty good.
That's great, that's great. I want to explore your story before we hop into your work. So could you maybe introduce yourself, your family, and the work that you have been doing?
Okay. So I'm Matt Sanders. I'm a professor of clinical psychology and also a foundation professor of parenting studies and family psychology at the University of Queensland. I'm the founder of a program called the Triple P Positive Parenting Program. I'm a grandparent. I'm now 70. I've got two kids in their 40s and five grandchildren, lovely grandchildren, aged from age 5 through to 16. And I have a beautiful wife that I've been married to for 46 years. So that's me.
That 50 is sneaking
up. And I've been
up.
At the University of Queensland for 40 years.
There you go. That 50th anniversary is sneaking up. Have you got any big plans for that one?
No, I haven't even thought about it. Thanks for reminding me of that, though.
Hopefully your wife isn't listening to this. She'll have high expectations. So in your 40-plus years of fathering, what's been a highlight for you?
Oh, gee, there have been many different highlights associated with different stages of our kids' development. The early highlights in terms of just transitioning into parenthood and the realization of just how crucially important that role is and how important it is to have fathers who are attuned to the needs of children and see themselves as having a serious and meaningful responsibility to play in raising the next generation. I mean, that's a kind of an early wake up call and an insight, I think, for a lot of men to realise just how crucial their role is. But I suppose that as your family kind of matures and goes through different stages of development from the crucial early childhood years to transitioning to school and then under high school and then beyond and then transitioning themselves into partnering and the parenthood role, it just really reminded me that parenting is a lifelong commitment to our offspring. And for anyone who thinks that the parenting journey is over once their kids have left home, there's got a lot to learn because it continues right throughout life. I reckon we should reserve judgment on how well we're doing in parenting until we see how our kids cope with their first midlife crisis in their 40s.
That's
but
great.
Of course, and well beyond that, because we're very actively involved in the grandparenting of our own grandchildren now, and we're fortunate to be in that position because we actually live in the same city.
Yeah,
and there are many parents who children grow up and then move away and they're in different states or sometimes even different countries. So the opportunity to be involved in the lives of younger children sometimes diminishes for for some people in a parenting role. And it's a bit of a loss for people not to have that opportunity.
Yeah. I love that idea of, parenting for life and even that image of how will you parent your child through their midlife crisis. But, a lot of our listeners are new and expecting dads. So I think it's helpful to have that perspective of, as a new dad, it's almost like, well, we just have to get through this next bit, then, we'll be cruising. But actually,
and then the next bit and then the next bit after that. But, one of the bits that we're not all that good at either talking about or even understanding is what parenthood looks like when you're getting older. Because, if you think about moving into your 70s and moving to your 80s and so on, one of the things that really influences the well-being of older people is to still have a good relationship with your kids. Because if you don't, they don't want to see you. And then you will not see your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren. And that's a formula for loneliness and isolation. Whereas if we're maintaining good, strong, positive, healthy contact and relationships with our kids across the different generations, you've always got something to talk about. You've always got something to remember. You've got a story to share, an anecdote to talk about, things to brag about. But if you've got no contact with your offspring because you've fallen out and they don't want to see you, then that's a very different scenario.
That's such a huge point with all of the data coming out now about loneliness, particularly for men and particularly for older men.
Yeah.
I think you're painting a really important point here in terms of that role of father. It really cuts the identity of a man. And the better you do it and the more equipped you are for it, the better it's going to serve you throughout your life.
Yeah, and just think about it in the longer term. It's fathering and it's grandfathering and it's great-grandfathering and it's still the same. Yeah. And the fundamental role changes a little bit, but we are still important to the lives of our children and their offspring. So, yeah, I mean, just the whole question about, you know, the fatherhood journey for me is it's been different at different stages of the life cycle, put it that way.
Yeah, I'm here. It's almost hard to pin down from the sounds of it because you have sort of played so many various roles.
But that's the exciting part because it means you're constantly evolving and learning. I mean, I think if you ever reach a point in your parenting journey where you think you've nailed it and you think you've got all the answers, even as a parenting expert who's studied it deeply over many, many years, if you're not learning, you're close to learning and you're close to being able to tune in to what the current issues that young people are dealing with that parents need support around. And these things are different and they evolve. I mean, in an age of climate change and climate anxiety, not many parents had thought 20 years ago, how do you support your kids who are really worried about the survival of our planet? What kind of parenting is needed to help kids deal with anxiety in a way that we'd never even thought of?
Yeah, it's the complexities and the nuances of it are increasing, I think, I wonder then, you know, within your own journey, if you could travel back to the delivery room, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, first of all, be there because it wasn't always guaranteed in those days that you were allowed to be there. But to be there, to be part of supporting your partner through that birth process and to allow the opportunity for early connection and bonding and being part of that journey, I think is important to kind of embrace and recognize as being, you know, a valuable thing. But I mean, the other thing that I would just say is, you know, treat it as a journey and treat it as something that you've got a lot to learn about and not be overwhelmed by the things you don't know, but to just be open to learning at every phase of the life cycle when you're raising children that there are better ways and not so good ways of doing things, and that there's no single magic bullet that's going to enable you to, because, for example, you've done the early childhood thing well or you've done the dealing with your toddlers and preschools and so on, that's no guarantee that you're going to be able to handle some of the challenges of early adolescence and some of the peer group issues that their kids are involved in. It increases the chances that you're going to be able to deal with it, but it's not a guarantee. And there's been many a parent who's just all of a sudden encountered something with their kids that gives them moments to pause and think, how in the hell did this happen? How did we get ourselves in this situation? I thought I'd done everything right. I'd done the best we could to lay the foundations, and we're still having difficulties. And that's normal. And to recognize it as being normal and not, you're not abnormal because you're experiencing that. But what it just highlights is just the need to keep open to learning, okay, well, how do we deal with this current situation?
I love that because I think for a lot of new dads, there can be this almost false confidence or bravado that comes from, well, I'm part of this generation that wants to be engaged and spend more time with my children. And I think we sort of measure ourselves off of that metric, but as you say, like, it's always learning and it does change. And I think that's the importance of having someone like yourself, Matt, to come and onto our podcast and speak to us, because you have developed a model that very much focuses on the equipping yourself to deal with different situations. So I wonder then if we could shift gears and look at Triple P, and if you could sort of expand on what are the foundations and aims of positive parenting?
Yeah, so I started my doctoral work in 1978, and I developed a parenting program then that was based on a home coaching model. This was for parents of kids who had really difficult preschool age kids with conduct problems. You know, they threw tantrums all the time, they were aggressive, they didn't do as they were told, and so on. And that we developed an intervention at that time that was based on sort of five key principles, if you like, and then a number of associated strategies. But the principles were the children were more likely to thrive and do well if it was a safe, interesting, and engaging environment where there is plenty of interesting and age-appropriate things for kids to do. So busy kids are less likely to get into strife and to have behavioural issues that the parents are dealing with. The second one is to create a positive learning environment where parents develop the skills of encouragement and providing positive feedback that's specific and descriptive, that enables kids to know that this thing, this action, this behaviour I've just engaged in is appropriate, it's acknowledged, it's valued, it's more likely to occur again. But it's not just about being positive and encouraging, because it also is about being responsive to times when children initiate requests for help. They want to show you something, they want to share something with you. And the skill is pausing and paying attention to children at the moment at which the kids are ready to share and talk and communicate about something, provide brief attention and let the kids get on with it. So it's the idea of responding to times when kids initiate requests for help and attention when they're doing it appropriately. The third principle is what we call assertive discipline. This is around establishing boundaries and limits. And so children do learn to cooperate with reasonable, fair, age-appropriate instructions that parents are giving them. Because if kids are not responsive to parental instructions, it means that the kids are often in control of a situation that the adult needs to be the leader in. And so this idea of having clear and specific rules that are fair and age appropriate but are consistently enforced, a few number of house rules that you consistently enforce are much better than having many rules that have no consequence. The fourth principle is having reasonable expectations of kids. And remember, reasonable sometimes means not having your expectations too high, but it can also mean not having them too low. Because sometimes if you've got expectations that are too low, you don't teach kids the skills that they need to learn to, for example, get dressed independently or to brush their teeth or to, take away off the table after having a meal their plate and putting it on the bench or putting it in a dishwasher or whatever is age appropriate. And the final thing is taking care of yourself as a parent. If you're miserable, if you're lonely, if you're living in a conflictual situation, it is so much more difficult to be positive, consistent, and encouraging with your kids. So those five key principles are the foundations of Triple P, and then they translate into about 17 or 18 specific skills and strategies. It's like a toolbox.
Yeah.
And the skills and strategies, you get the right mix and combination of things happening, and then children learn the skills that they need to learn. And a lot of Triple P is about teaching kids the skills and behaviours they need to learn to do well, given the particular situations that they're in. So I think the fundamental idea, however, is that kids are going to be doing better in a safe, stable, predictable environment where it's mostly based on encouragement and positivity, but you've still got parents who are not pushovers. They have clear rules, they have got clear boundaries, clear limits, and they enforce them consistently. And then it makes it so much easier for kids to learn what's expected, what I need to do in this situation. And the goal is always to teach the kids the skills they need to handle the situations that they're finding tricky. And those skills change at each successive phase of development.
I love the practicality of that, the toolkit, and having just done a whole range of renovations here. We just bought a house star this year, a whole bunch of, renos. You need as many tools as you can.
Absolutely. And you can't, you know, if you've got a drill, you can't use it as a hammer.
No.
And so, you know, a drill is a fantastic thing, as is a screwdriver, as is any other tool, but it has to be used in the right way for the right job. Mm. And there's a lot of parenting skills that are like that. And so it's about selecting the right tools in the right combinations in the right order in order to address the issue that you're confronting.
Yeah. If I could dig into one of those principles you talked about, the expectations, that fascinates me. And I think it's front of mind. I've been listening to Hamish Blake's podcast on fathering, and he talks a lot about how with his kids, he has to keep reminding himself not to have adult expectations on them and to sort of come back down to their level. And I think for a lot of men, that is a challenge because we are so practically sort of geared. We want like outcomes focused. And, mm-hmm. and I think, yeah, sometimes we see our children fumbling or bumbling their way through something, particularly at that toddler age and newborn toddler age. So what would be the advice or the tools within Triple P to sort of manage those expectations? Because you're right, it is the other side of it as well, of not having too low expectations.
Oh, yeah. And part of the problem of just having expectations that are too low is that you've just given up on trying to teach the kids the things that they need to learn, where you'd actually need to teach them in a different way. Mm. Look, when you're judging whether your expectations are too high or too low, there's a couple of things you can do. First of all, watch what other parents do with their kids at the same age. You know, what are other people in my social group as a parent expecting of their kids? And you can see both examples. As soon as you start open your eyes and ears, you'll see examples of things that you think people have been too harsh or too liberal or too not firm enough. The second thing is seek some advice at times from trusted people in your social network, which could include grandparents, but could also include teachers. If you've got a GP or a pediatrician whose opinion you value, you can ask the question, is this being too tough or not? The other side of it is that if you've got an expectation that you think is the child doesn't have the capability of doing, then you ask yourself, well, what are the capabilities they need to actually meet this expectation? Mm-hmm. And you might have to teach those first. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the other side of the expectation thing is expectations of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where we can get into a lot of strife as well. We expect too much. If you're expecting to be perfect as a parent, forget it. You know, it's a formula for misery because you're constantly feeling as though you're falling short. And one of the things that we need to do is just to accept at times that we make errors of judgment and that sometimes we have to bounce back from those, but don't keep making the same mistake over and over again, but expecting a different outcome, you know, because that's not going to work either. And I would just say, don't be harsh on yourself as a dad. Mm. You know, give yourself the chance to, you know, make some mistakes, but learn from them and be particularly open to any suggestions or feedback that you might get from your partner about how to do things slightly differently. And their opinion matters, particularly if they're spending more time with the children than you are.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can come in on the tail end of something and you've missed what's gone on before then, and you jump in and try to do the sort of the troubleshooting, solve the problem, rescuing kind of approach.
Yes.
And what you needed to ask first is, what's happening here? What have you tried so far?
Yeah.
Where are we up to with this? So you're on the same page.
Mm. The other foundation that struck me was the rules, the boundaries, the limits that we put in place. And I wonder, what does that look like when you do have a newborn or an infant or a toddler? Like, because when I hear those words, I think I go to rationalization, and there's no rationalizing with a toddler or a teenager for that matter. But so what does that look like practically in terms of setting these, you know, sort of family rules or house rules and maintaining those? Yeah.
Well, remember, a rule is a verbal statement of something. So the child has to be old enough to understand the language that's being used to start off with. And, of course, you're not so much talking about rules and boundaries and limits with babies because, I mean, most of their needs are being responded to by being fed, being given the opportunity to sleep and having lots of love and physical contact and so on. But as kids are moving towards toddlerhood and moving, you know, from the 2 to the 3-year-old age group, you've got getting kids who are starting to become a little bit more autonomous and independent and want to do their own thing and, you know, are not necessarily responding to instructions or directions that they're being asked to do. And sometimes these are directions and instructions for their own safety, you know. You don't climb on there. If you'd like to climb, you can climb over here. No, we don't jump on the couch, but you can jump over here. And so these are things that are designed to keep kids safe in a predictable environment. And I think the important aspect of it is that you're looking to use the child's current level of capability in understanding language. And so when you're introducing a rule or an idea that we do this first and then we can do that, that kind of notion, when kids are able to repeat that, so what do we have to do? What do we have to remember about being a good shopper today? What do good shoppers do when we go into the supermarket? And you can have a discussion of a rule before you go in, but you know your kids are nailing it when they can tell you what the rule is and say, oh, I've got to stay close to you, mummy or daddy, and do as I'm told. And so that those kind of are the clues relating to, you know, what kind of rules kids are capable of responding to. And then it's all to do with consistency and follow through. So when they're cooperating with the rule, plenty of praise, attention, good boy for staying close. Thank you for helping with that. That was a beautiful voice that you used when you asked me for that. The answer is still no. that was great how you accepted no that time and didn't go ballistic. So it's kind of drawing to the kids' attention the things they've done well that it represent cooperation with the rule or ground rule. And when they break it, you've got a plan in place for following through. You know, so if kids are whinging and complaining and demanding things, then the worst thing you can do is just acquiesce and cave into them and give them the drink or the ice block or whatever it was. You accidentally reward the problematic behavior. And so for those things where there's a problematic behavior occurring that's triggered by them wanting something, you remove the troublesome object. You take it out of reach. The opportunity to access it is gone. And, of course, you have to think about, you know, what other consequences might be needed. And that varies depending on the behavior and the age of the child.
And Matt, I think there we see that example of the parenting relationship changing because, as you say, like an infant, you're meeting all of their needs, but then you move into that toddler, the 2 to 3 age, and all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but you do have to adapt and learn and implement some new skill sets that you didn't have to for the first 2 years.
No, but the fun thing about this is that our kids are training us all the time. And so they've got the capacity to actually reward us very positively for good parenting by being responsive to that good parenting. And they smile and they want to cuddle and they want to and they give us feedback that we know we're on the right track. And that, you know, so in some ways, while we're socializing our children, they are also socializing us.
So true. So then I wonder, you said that you began this research in 1978.
Yeah.
What a very different world, particularly in terms of parenting. So I wonder what were the needs and gaps that you saw then? And how would you compare, contrast that to what parenting looks like today?
You know, some of the same problems that exist now existed then. So that the, you know, when I was doing this early work, parents were concerned about kids being rude and disobedient, aggressive, throwing tantrums. couldn't get them to do anything. You know, meal times were a nightmare. Trying to get them into bed was a problem. Using a rude or inappropriate voice, misbehaving in public, all of those things existed then and still do. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, there are many more parents who are juggling their work and family responsibilities. You know, many more parents are returning to work early rather than having period off after having children. Parents are needing to juggle work and family responsibilities by learning to work from home. And when you've got young kids, that can be a challenge in its own right. We are living in a world of technology now, which has made some things easier. But also we're having to worry now about screen time and, you know, predators that are accessing our kids' mobile devices and how you deal with that. So there are continuities and similarities that have always been there, probably always been there, mm-hmm. relating to how you get on with kids. Mm-hmm. And then there are things that evolve as a function of society changing, technology changing. And it is a very different world with respect to technology. We used to deal with problems like kids fighting over the landline phone and who was going to have, you know, be able to be on the phone. You can get multiple devices in the same household of kids who've got phones often from age 10 on. Yeah. So that issue is not occurring to the same degree. And even fighting over what TV programs you watch, when kids can watch things on multiple devices, these are just different challenges, but they're not more difficult. Mm. They're not substantially different from the need basically to decide for yourself whether you're dealing with a problem or not, and then to work out a game plan and a set of tools and strategies you're going to use to try to solve it.
Mm.
Because remember, just prior to my growing up in the 50s, I mean, we had generations of kids who had been through the Depression, who had been through war. There's always been natural disasters. There's always been terrible things that have happened to families and communities. So we did not invent this era of difficult times in raising kids by any means. In fact, you'd say probably the opposite. This generation of parents have never had better access to parenting advice ever in the history of the universe. Mm. If you think about the amount of material and information that's available online and so on, probably it's the opposite. It's more confusing.
Yeah.
Because there's so much out there.
Yeah.
But one thing that we know, particularly that fathers are looking for, they want evidence-based programs. Mm-hmm. They want things that work, that have been trialed and tested. They want well-trained people delivering this advice and guidance. They don't want the homespun theory that's all about, well, I did this and I did that, and that was great for me. And so we've got a more sophisticated parenting audience that is asking, and they should, asking more nuanced questions about who does this work for and what is the evidence supporting this? Mm. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. And that was going to be my next question is how's the response been different since 1978 to now from parents? And yeah, I think what you're saying here and what we've heard from others in this space is that there is a greater interest and particularly for fathers, that interest has grown in how do I become a better dad?
It's interesting, this one to do with father's involvement in parenting programs, because it is still the case that around 80% of all parents who do parenting programs are mothers. Now, some of those mothers won't have fathers who are actively involved. There is a father, of course, but they may not be involved in the child's life at mm-hmm. the moment. So we have a lower proportion of children who have come from families whose fathers are participating in the parenting programs. What we know is that when mothers and fathers do it together, there's a really good outcome for both mothers, fathers, and children. So that, there's almost no evidence to show that fathers do worse in parenting programs than mothers. In fact, quite the opposite, that when fathers are attuned, are involved and are participating in parenting programs, they do change their parenting. And they change it in a positive direction to benefit children. But there are practical and logistic things that can get in the road of fathers being able to participate. And one of them is time. Another is the delivery methods that are used. When you run all your programs during the working day, I mean, this is a problem for both mothers and fathers, but it appears to be more of a problem for fathers getting there. Like, to get time off work to do a parenting program that's run during a school day is almost impossible. So we need much greater flexibility in how these programs are delivered on night, in the evening, on weekends. But of course, you've got to have a workforce who's with their own family. They've got to be able to juggle this and manage this as part of what it means to deliver parenting services. And of course, fathers are also particularly attuned into participating in online programs. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the great things that's happened here in Australia is that the federal government, the Commonwealth government, has made programs like Triple P Online available free to everyone around the country. And we know about 150,000 parents have participated in Triple P Online since that has occurred. And about 18% of those parents are fathers. And so fathers are participating, but they could do so in larger numbers. And it doesn't appear that the problem is that, you know, the programs are not suitable or fathers don't like them or don't see the content as being relevant to them. That's not the case. They're mostly very happy with the programs that are being delivered when they're delivered in the hands of a skilled practitioner who was attuned to the issues that fathers want to talk about. But that's just good delivery of a program. It's not the problem with, it's not the fault of the program. It's about just being tuned into what your clientele is seeking support around. And so all I would say is that one thing that we could really do that would make a difference is that if we had schools who saw it as part of their role to provide parenting support for all families whose children are transitioning to school, and so that there's a universal opportunity for mums and dads to participate in a brief, high-quality, culturally informed, evidence-based parenting program, we would get many, many, many more fathers participating in this because it's meeting their needs. It's brief, focused, it's evidence-based, and it's about producing an outcome that promotes the well-being of their offspring, which dads are wanting. They want their kids to succeed and do well in school and in life. And so I'd love to see a situation where we just saw it as a healthy, normal, desirable rite of passage that everyone in a parenting or caring role has an opportunity to do a good quality parenting program. We would never create a situation where someone was driving on our roads without having done a driver education course. We wouldn't even contemplate it. But boy, we do allow people to become, and they become parents and basically do whatever they like in raising their children, and will do far more harm to their kids than you would through motor vehicle accidents. So we've just got to really remind ourselves that if we're wanting to prevent serious problems with our kids, with our youth, the more we can support parents in this journey, both mothers and fathers, the better off we will be as a society. And kids will value this greatly.
It's hard to follow that up, Matt. That's an incredible point there. And I think that's the beauty of Triple P Online, free access thanks to the government, even something like SMS for Dads is one of our partners with Dads Group. And Richard Fletcher talked on our podcast about you make it an opt-out rather than an opt-in.
Yes, like, I agree with that. Yeah, because if it's an opt-out, it's a normal, healthy thing you do. Everyone's doing it. It's no big deal. It's just this is what we do. Yeah. When your kids are 4 or 5, they're transitioning to school or, you know, some other key developmental transition, And then the community expectation is that this is just normal. Mm-hmm. There's no stigma. Mm-hmm. There's no, oh, this is the program you do to stop welfare taking your children. Because if parenting programs are associated with that, then, you know, who's going to want to jump up and put their hand up and say, oh, I really want to be involved in that?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, there are lots of ways of supporting parents that, I mean, we've done some recent work with the NRL focusing on parenting in the context of children's sport and being a good spectator. And you know, one of the things that we know about kids' participation in sport, if you've got parents who are going pear-shaped on the sideline, you combine that with poor coaching, kids don't want to play.
That's it.
And they desist from their participation in organised sport. But if you've got parents who've got the skills to positively encourage their children's participation, they reduce their emphasis on competition and winning, and particularly just cut out any abusive behaviour towards the referee, towards opponents, towards other parents, or particularly towards their own children, then kids are participating in sport for the two reasons that are most important: to make friends and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, and in the process of making friends and having fun, they're getting fit and healthy. They're learning about teamwork, working as a group. And these are a set of life skills that are so important to our community.
Mm-hmm.
So parenting programs can be delivered in lots of different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
I've just given the example of sport, but you could think about it in the example of children learning a musical instrument, children learning something about their culture, about the arts. There are so many pursuits that children have that require parental involvement, and you want that parental involvement to be positive and encouraging and not based around the parents' own needs for the kids to be as successful as they can be.
Love that point. And can I zero in on something you said just a little bit ago about these parents can't be about intervening when everything goes pear-shaped, that you don't have to be a loser dad or a bum dad to participate in something like Triple P, but it actually, to circle back to where we started, it's about how do you build up a skill set and continue to build that skill set as you face new challenges in your parenting.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, one of the unfortunate things about father participation in parenting programs is that often they do wait until things have got really serious. Mm. And it's like a wake up call. Oh, my God, we've got to do something about this or my child's going to be kicked out of school. Mm. And, you know, we know that more if parents are experiencing more behavior difficulties with their children, they're more likely to say they want to do a parenting program, but to do it early rather than late. You know, and ideally you do it in a way to try to prevent these problems in the first place, because many of them are preventable, but not all of them. And it's not the case that all behavioral and emotional problems are the result of poor parenting at all, but they're part of the solution. And so, I mean, you can think of the role of genes and biology and a whole bunch of things that could, including the peer group, the kind of education that children are having, that can influence difficulties that children have. But when you've identified a difficulty like this and you say, well, what are the moving parts? What are the levers that we can do anything about? Parenting is the one of the most, if not the most important thing to be focused on. And in focusing on it, if we have both mothers and fathers working in, even if they're not living together, they can do it in harmony enough so that they're not conflicting with each other all the time, which makes it really hard for kids to learn what's appropriate to do. So I'm very optimistic about our capacity to prevent a lot of really serious problems in kids, including child abuse and serious behavioral and emotional problems, when parents in the community take seriously their responsibility to prepare themselves as well as possible to undertake the parenting role. There are just so many wins here, and it's such a cost-effective way of trying to approach these problems.
Yeah, and certainly that's some of the research background with dad's group is that when you engage a dad, when he's at that critical point of adopting that new identity of father, it does reduce the negative outcomes of mental illness. It reduces the likelihood of abuse within the home, and it contributes to the development of the child. So
how can you be a good dad and not have a protective response towards your kids to do no harm? You know, because part of being a responsible parent is to create an environment that's a healthy environment to grow up in, and you're trying to eliminate from your repertoire those things that do harm, including being horrible to your partner, having arguments, getting into, you know, any kind of coercive control or family violence. And of course, you're refraining from any of those behaviors that are harmful to children. And you're focusing on the positive interaction skills that you can use in all your relationships to make it a happy, healthy home environment. And do you know who benefits from that? Everyone benefits. Dads benefit, mums benefit, children benefit, neighbours benefit, extended family members benefit. Because when you've got healthy, well-adjusted children, we've got offspring you can be proud of, and that, you know, and it's such a connector. Our children are such important connectors for us all in the community. This is how so many parents get to know other people.
Through
their children.
Yep.
Yeah. And these are sometimes lifelong friendships that are created through our kids. So it's pretty valued outcomes there.
As you said earlier, it's not just the parents' role to socialize the children, but the children socialize us as well.
Yeah, and they become more and more skilled at doing it.
Yeah.
When it's interesting, you know, when kids have had a lot of praise and encouragement, particularly things like descriptive praise, you watch them with their peers and with their siblings and at times with their grandparents and parents. The kids are just so good at providing this positive praise and encouragement and positive feedback. It's so nice when it happens.
Yeah, my wife reported back yesterday after our little boy, he's nearly two, after a swimming lesson, that he was coaching the other children through the lesson and encouraging them and offering that, that positive encouragement and praise to the other children in the pool. So, it is.
Yeah, and of course, they learn in the end that you can do too much of it as well. So you've just got to learn when enough is enough. And I can remember one of my grandkids who said to, I cooked a Sunday roast dinner pretty much all the time for our extended family on a Sunday. And my grandson came up to me and he said, "Oh, Granddad, you're a really awesome cook. And I love the way you always give me a bone on my plate." So he was not only encouraging me with cooking the lamb roast, but boy, he was priming me to make sure he got a bone he could gnaw on as well as the rest of the meat. And I mean, kids learn these skills, and it's so funny when it occurs, and I always remember that.
I want to move now. I wonder if you could paint a picture for us of a family that's accessed Triple P. They've gone through the program. What does the relationship look like, not just between the parent and child, but between parents as well? What does that look like?
Okay, a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, there's less friction. Mm-hmm. There's fewer raised voices. So houses tend to be quieter, particularly at moments of transition. There's not as much yelling, shouting, screaming, that kind of thing occurring, which means it's less stressful. Parents, when you ask them what's changed, will say they feel more confident in the role of parenting, and they've got greater knowledge and skill about how to handle situations that previously they felt either uncertain about or we're just simply not able to handle. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's occurring is that the parents report being closer to their children. I remember one parent saying to me a couple of years ago, she said, "You know, I've always loved my child. Doing Triple P, I've now learned to like him." Mm-hmm. And because the child is actually more likable, less demanding, less screaming, fewer tantrums, it means that the children are easier to spend time with. And it just evokes all of this more positive emotion towards towards your children, including being proud of their accomplishments. The other thing that I'd say is that the kids are more likely to have friends who want to come around to your home. And so playdates become more likely to occur because it's less conflictual. The kids enjoy being around a positive family environment and are happy to have their friends come around and share that with them. Mm. The other thing that will often happen is that you'll find it easier to get a babysitter. You don't get to the major behaviour problem, which means that you can actually have a little bit of me time or a couple time to do things that would be good for your adult relationships. I can't think of any downside for parents doing a positive parenting program. It's mostly an upside. And so long as we're reasonable with our expectations of ourselves, we just see it as an ongoing evolving process of learning to do the right things by your kids and families and feeling good about it, because this is what life's about. You know, if we're taking care of our offspring, we're looking after our families, it's pretty basic, isn't it?
Exactly. And what's not to love about that vision of a happy, harmonious home? And again, I'll circle back to, you don't have to wait till things are falling apart to access a program. Like if that's what you value for your family, and if that's the sort of father or parent that you want to be, why not just do the program now
and do another one if you need to, and a top up, and and the moments of pausing and reflection that you have in doing a parenting program can be really healthy, because sometimes we just need to adjust tactic, strategy. We've tried this, it's not working. Why isn't it working? What could we try differently now? Mm. And then when you're doing that in a planful way, you're automatically feeling more in control. Because it's not a knee-jerk response anymore. It's a considered, thoughtful one, and it's either worked or it hasn't worked. And if it hasn't worked, don't keep doing it. There's plenty of other skills in the toolkit.
Absolutely. Matt, I wonder if you could share with our listeners, if they're wanting to follow up on Triple P or even wanting to follow up on some of the research that you've done, mm-hmm. where's the best place to access that?
So they can go to the website triplep-parenting.net, and that'll take them to the main Triple P site where they can access Triple P online or find out about where they can do a Triple P course around Australia. If they're interested in the research base of Triple P, they can go to pfsc.uq.edu.au, which is the Parenting and Family Support Centre's website at UQ, and you'll see the range of programs and research that's going on, also a comprehensive evidence-based list of all the studies. You know, the thing that a lot of people don't realise is that Triple P is actually the most extensively studied and researched parenting program in the world. There's about 800 studies that have been done on it, including over 400 evaluation studies in 41 countries. It's being delivered in 72 countries. There's over 150,000 practitioners delivering the program. And it's an Aussie homegrown program.
Yeah.
And it's just continuously evolving on the basis of ongoing research and development. And we always consider Triple P a work in progress. It's getting better and better all the time. So, it's great to have parents who are really interested in accessing not only the programs, but also the knowledge and research that underpins the programs.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, very thankful and grateful for your time this morning. You are, from the sounds of it, a very busy person. As my dog barks in the background here, but I want to say thank you for your time and thank you to think that, I don't know how it must feel for yourself to sort of say, the breadth and the width of what Triple P has become and all of that background, all the research, all the studies, and to think that you were the person who, began that must be such an incredible
Look, it's a good feeling to feel as though you've had a your work has made a contribution, but I've just got to make sure I acknowledge the contribution of many others who've supported this work, our own doctoral students here at UQ, Triple P International, who's the industry partner of the University of Queensland and disseminating the program globally. And it's been a collective effort to make it happen. And it's one of these things that it's just with continuing investment and ongoing research and development, it will continue to evolve. And it's something I think that we can not only be proud of what it's achieved to date, but it's also got a great deal of prospect for reaching many more families, many more dads, not just in Australia, but more globally as well.
Yeah.
Because I tell you, if we have fathers who are really attuned and value their own parenting role and their role as a dad, we will have a much happier universe and we'll have much less conflict occurring. And their kids are going to be so much better off. So it's that important.
Mm. Oh, thank you so much for your time, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure to be to contribute to your podcast.
Thank you.
So all the best.
Thanks, Matt.
And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.